ஓமகியானத்தின் இடம் அசிய ஞானம் ஜன ஷலாக சக்ஷூரு நீலி தாம் ஏன தஸ்மை ஸ்ரீ குரு.
The Vedas are the body of knowledge concerning the Supreme Lord. Within the Vedic knowledge, there are three divisions. There are various divisions. It's in the Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda, Upasana Kanda, the paths of worship, the paths of knowledge, the paths of work. Actually, all the Vedas are meant for understanding Krishna. Vede Ramayana Chaiva, Purane Bharate Chata, Adavantita Mandecha, Hari Sarvatra Giyate. All the Vedic knowledge, beginning, middle, and end. Vedas, Ramayana, Mahabharata, all of them. They're all meant for glorifying Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that understanding of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vedesha Sarvaya Hameva Vedyaha, in all the Vedas, the point, the object of knowledge is Krishna. Ved means knowledge, and the object of knowledge is Krishna. So that knowledge of Krishna is divided into three parts: sambandha, abhideya, prayojan, knowledge of our relationship with God, how to act in that relationship, and how to enter into that relationship. This is the subject matter of the Vedas. Now, the Vedic knowledge, that is a body of knowledge that is given by the Supreme Lord. It concerns all matters necessary for living in this world and for getting out of it. Now, when we say a body of knowledge, we may consider just like this: history, geography, mathematics, biology, Encyclopedia Britannica, all kinds of things. More, tell me why this book is sitting here with all kinds of information. What is a seahorse? Who published the first newspaper? There are different bodies of knowledge. Even I saw now they have in one university in England one department for studying football. It's important in modern society. It's considered very important. So they're studying so many different things. The Vedas is not exactly a body of knowledge in the sense that you can go to a library and you can get books on medieval Prussian history and different subject matters. Rather, this is the subject matter of the absolute truth, not relative truth. Everything in this world will pass away. There won't be any Prussia to study, nor anyone to study it. Everyone, all living beings will merge into the body of the Supreme Lord. But that knowledge which is again and again given in human society, even after the dissolution and the material world is created, and that which concerns the world which is never destroyed, that is the Vedic knowledge. Also, this knowledge, we say absolute truth. Absolute means that which is not dependent upon anything else. The Sanskrit word is nirankush. Ankush, who knows what that word means? Any mahouts here? For driving the elephant. There's a rod for driving an elephant. So the elephant is controlled by that. So nirankush means not under the control of anyone. That is stated in the beginning of Bhagavata. What's the first verse? Swarat. Swarat means independent. It's not anyone under anyone's control. This is Krishna, absolute. Not under anyone's control. Everything is dependent upon him. He is not dependent on anyone. He is independent. So the Vedic knowledge, that is not... You see, any body of knowledge that is put together by a conditioned soul or conditioned souls, that is infected with the mistakes of Brahmpramad Vipralipsa Karana Patav, which means, who knows, what are the four defects of conditioned souls? Mistakes. Cheating propensity. In the being in illusion and imperfect senses. So any body of knowledge that is obtained by conditioned souls, it must be imperfect. And this, it all depends on the observation of the observer and the interpretation. Just like one person looks at the sun, a child may look at the sun and speculate that this is some fleet which is up in the sky about 2 miles up, maybe some floodlight or something like this. But a learned person who studied knows that it's a ball of fire some 93 million miles away. So knowledge, as we receive it in human society in the present time, that's based upon observation, hypothesis, but so many times you find it is wrong. Or two different people may view the same knowledge in a different way. They may interpret it in a different way. Just like history, you study history, some people see that there's a progression, there are different theories of history. Some people see the progression of mankind through different phases. And other people say that just a jumble of disorganized happenings. There's no particular order to it. There are different theories. Karl Marx had his interpretation of history, that it's a struggle for the awakening of the proletariat. So the same information may be seen in different ways by different people according to their own imperfect standpoints. But the Vedic knowledge is not like that. It's called apaurusheya. It means it's not given by any mundane person. But it directly emanates from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's not different from Him. The fact and the recording of the fact are not different. See, there's a difference. This is a problem in modern science. They're trying to understand what is the position of the observer. Because the observer is different. The observer of phenomena immediately puts his interpretation upon it. But the Vedic knowledge is not like that, because it's stated by the Supreme Lord, who is non-different from the Vedic knowledge. It concerns him, it's intrinsic with him. It's non-different from him. So that Vedic knowledge is given in human society. And the essence of that is Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. The essence in concise form is Bhagavad Gita, and the essence in expanded form is Srimad Bhagavatam. That is knowledge of the essence. Saram Saram Hirgahritam. Srimad Bhagavatam is the essence of the essence extracted by Veda Vyas. So Veda Vyas, he compiled all the Vedic literatures after meditating upon the Absolute Truth. He was inspired by the Supreme Lord, who he is non-different from in his incarnation. Veda Vyas is, of course, according to Madhva Sampradaya, he is Vishnu Tattva, but other Sampradayas identify him as a jiva who is empowered. Anyway, there's no difference in the matter of this. The work that he's doing. He is empowered to write and compile the Vedic literature. So he is empowered, Shakyavesh, yes. He is empowered to see the material and the Supreme Lord, the material energy, all the different tattvas. These are called tattvas. Vishnu tattva, Jiva tattva, Shakti tattva, Maya tattva. All the different points that have to be understood. So he compiled the Vedic literature, and ultimately he compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam for the ultimate benefit of human society. Actually, the Srimad Bhagavatam is the very point of Vedic literature. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that even if all the libraries in the world were to be burned and only Srimad Bhagavatam remained, there would not be any loss to human society. This is the actually valuable knowledge. Now, this Srimad Bhagavatam was compiled by Ved Vyas after going through so much knowledge. He compiled, means he may not have personally written everything down, but through his agents, there were different rishis who are working under him. He compiled, actually Veda is one body of knowledge, but he compiled it into four. Vyas means who divide, so he divided it into four for the sake of clarification. And then he put the essence of that in the Vedanta Sutra and explained that in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, this Vedic knowledge, it is very subtle. It's not easy to understand. We have the same problem in understanding. That we have Brahma, Brahma, Advipra, Lipsa, Karana, Partav. We have these four defects. So even though we may read those books, because we're reading them through our imperfect senses, we make mistakes, tendency to cheat, being an illusion. Therefore, even though the subject matter is perfect, we may again completely misinterpret it. So how are we to get this knowledge? It's not just a matter of reading the book. And even what is in the Vedic knowledge, what is given there, everything may not be given there. Because Krishna is unlimited. So even the Srimad Bhagavatam is unlimited, because it's Krishna. But even Krishna is unlimited, so even though everything is there, that may not be directly perceived. Just like, for instance, we don't find the name of Radharani in Srimad Bhagavatam. But the whole essence of Srimad, the very meaning of Srimad Bhagavatam is to describe Krishna's relationship with Radharani. That's the essence of the essence of the essence. So who's simply to read it, we may not understand. There may be so many things we don't understand. Those who are envious of Krishna, they can never understand. That's why at the end of Gita means we're just getting ready to come into Srimad Bhagavatam. So at the end of Gita, Krishna says that it should not be spoken to those who are envious of me. They cannot understand. So just as Krishna is understood in different levels by different devotees, so Srimad Bhagavatam also. So what one devotee sees there may be perfect and complete because it's Srimad Bhagavatam and he's a devotee and he's understanding Krishna. But other devotees may find more, just like we find Madhvacharya, at least in his commentaries he has not found Radharani in the Bhagavatam. But other acharyas have. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is the essence of all acharyas, he has proclaimed that Srimad Bhagavatam, Pramanam Amalam, Srimad Bhagavatam is the topmost evidence. All the Vedas, there's Veda Pramanam, as the knowledge of the Vedas, that is Praman, that is authoritative evidence. And what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu found in there, that the topmost method of worship, the essence of all methods of worship, is that which is conceived of by the gopis of Vrindavan. So there are so many parts in the Bhagavatam. There are so many parts in the Bhagavatam, so many stories told, the different avatars Krishna is described. But what is actually the essence? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has revealed that and concentrated on that. We find that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he also relished Ramayana. He also relished the stories of Dhruva Maharaj. But certainly Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is best known for his relishing the pastimes of Krishna in the conjugal rasa. So not everyone may find them in the Vedic literature. So how are we to know this? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu revealed this. Anarpitachara inchira karunyavatirno kalo samapyatama natajvala rasa swabhakti shriya. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has described that he has given that which was not given before. At least not for a long time, not since he last came. One day of Brahma ago. Topmost nectar of devotion to himself in the most radiant relationship. So how are we to understand these things? See, if, just like the British, they also read the Vedas. Max Muller, adopted British, lackey of the British. He read the Vedas with the specific purpose to say this is all nonsense. And we have so many people following in his footsteps even today, big so-called gurus in India, talking all nonsense in the name of the Vedas. Vedas means it's the only thing which makes sense, and everything else is nonsense. But people who are nonsense, they take the Vedas and use it to talk more nonsense. It becomes even more nonsense. If they only spoke nonsense, that would be nonsensical. But if they take the Vedas, which is supposed to take you out of the nonsense and make you sensible, and then you talk nonsense, then it becomes, in English we say, double Dutch. Dutch is already, to an Englishman, sounds like nonsense. So if you say double Dutch, it's double nonsense. So many wrong ideas. And I was telling the other day, Mayavadis, how are they misinterpreting the Vedic knowledge? Very rascal. How they misinterpret. They don't find Krishna. They don't want Krishna. They want to blaspheme Krishna. These very books which are meant for glorifying Krishna, these knowledge which is meant for glorifying Krishna, because they're envious of Krishna, they take that and blaspheme Krishna. Therefore, this knowledge should not be spoken to those who are envious, or not austere, or not engaged in devotional service. They can't understand. Not only will they misunderstand, but if they propagate their misunderstanding, then they're doing greatest disservice. In India, we find so many people confused because they've heard so many wrong things. Mostly everyone's confused because they all heard wrongly. What is the message of Bhagavatam? So how are we to receive this knowledge? We ourselves are subject to make mistakes, illusion of the cheating propensity and of imperfect senses. Therefore, this knowledge has to be received from those who are in contact with the apurusheya source, the non-material source. Shastra has to be received in line of parampara acharyas who are in touch with the Vedic knowledge. Amanyu Prashamashrayam, those who have taken shelter of the Vedic knowledge, those who have absorbed in the Vedic knowledge. So we see that the great acharyas, even what is written in Shastra, even more they can reveal. They can give an understanding. Just by reading the book, you may not understand. Just like, for instance, we find in the Bhagavatam, there is one word in the second canto, Dwapara Ado. Ado means at the beginning. Dwapara Ado. Pitir Dwapayano Aham. Shukdev Goswami says that Adhitavam Dwapara Ado, Pitir Dwapayanaya Aham. That this Vedic knowledge, the Srimad Bhagavatam, was taught to me by my father, Dwapara Ado, at the beginning of Dwapara Yuga. What it says, that's what it is. But then you might ask, well, how is that? Because Vyasadeva came at the end of Dwapara Yuga. And Jiva Goswami explains, this may be seen, the beginning from a certain angle of vision, just like the beginning of a tree is the bottom. So sometimes the beginning may be seen as the end. So it seems to be very strange. But the Acharya gives the explanation. Just like if you're watching, say you're watching on television, a race, some men are running. And on the screen you see they're running from left to right. And someone else is watching the race on another channel. And they're running from right to left. How is it the same race? It's both live. Because they have the camera on the other side. One channel has the camera here, the other channel. So it's the same thing, and it looks opposite. But it's just a matter of seeing from a different point of view. And so on. It's the same thing. But someone else may say, how can it be the same? It's supposed to be the same thing, but on this screen they're running this way, or on this screen they're running that way. So the acharya has the vision to see and understand. Even many of these lilas we find in Srimad Bhagavatam, it's given very briefly. But the acharyas, especially Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, has given many explanations. For instance, we find that the gopis are calling Krishna Achita. Why have you called us here? We already left home. We're already in big trouble. Now we only came to see you, and now you're telling us to go back again. So that's just given briefly in Bhagavatam. But Vishwanath Chakravarti gives a whole dialogue how Krishna and the gopis are arguing with each other. So how can you say that? That's not Shastra. What is that? Shastra means the acharyas, he's seeing that by his transcendental vision. It's not just he's making up some fiction, some literary fiction, but he sees them. So in this way, the Goswami literature, those who are familiar with Gauriya Vaishnava philosophy, they've heard of Goswami literature. It means the six Goswamis, they've written many books, which you might say, how is this? They've written dramas describing the pastimes of Krishna, which you won't find anywhere in, not in the Vedas, Puranas. They seem to be made up. No, this is the transcendental vision of the acharya. They can see. It's going on in their heart all the time. Primandana charita, bhakti vilochanin, santasa daiva hridyesha vilokayan, yang shamasandara machintya guna swarupa. Govindamadi Purusham Tamahamujam. Those who are pure devotees, they constantly see Krishna's pastimes going on in their hearts. And sometimes they just little drops come out in the form of their writings. Little drops they reveal. Although Krishna's pastimes are unlimited. At every moment Krishna performs so many pastimes that no one. It's like it's described about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami wrote that I am now writing about the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, but at every moment of every day, his pastimes, you could not describe, even one moment you could not describe fully, even if you had millions of lifetimes. So, the point is that the acharyas, This is one level how they review. But even at the most basic level, not to want to speak of the very deep inner revelations of the Shastra. Even the basic understanding of Shastra, that has to be revealed by one who has understood by hearing in the Parampara system. Has to be described. Means someone will listen, will serve his guru, will follow that path, will become absorbed in that, and he teaches others, and this way the parampara system comes down. How to explain all these points? So many people are reading Bhagavad Gita. Some people find in Bhagavad Gita Sarva Kama Phalatyaga. Have you read that? Science of Self-Realization? There's one Professor Stahl who was arguing with Prabhupada that the whole point of Bhagavad Gita is to give up the fruits of your work. This is the ultimate teaching. And so many nonsense scholars, they criticize Prabhupada because Prabhupada, you'll find in his Bhagavad Gita purports, especially in the 8th chapter, Prabhupada repeatedly recommends the chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And the scholars say, but we don't find this in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna's telling Arjuna to fight. We don't find any Hare Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. Actually, Shivaram Maharaj has written a wonderful book, which is a very nice punch in the face for all these rascal mundane scholars, in which he completely, they've made so many criticisms that you're just giving your own, this Bhaktivedanta Swami is just giving his dogmatic views. And where is it? What about all this chanting? There's no chanting in Bhagavad Gita. What is this? It's all simply made up. And every time you see the word yoga, you translate it as devotional service. What is all this? So, Shivaram Maharaj is very logically, very analytically, showed that these scholars, as Prabhupada writes in his purport, are all rascals. That Prabhupada's explanation of Bhagavad Gita is Bhagavad Gita as it is, and any explanation which is not in line with that is all bogus. Only Prabhupada has explained this problem. The scholars cannot understand. If you have any doubts, if you're reading Yoga, Karma, Sukho, Shalam, and Prabhupada writes that devotional service, yoga, where is it? Yoga, he's saying yoga, that means sitting and breathing like this. The Prabhupada says devotional service. So how is that? So Shivaram Maharaj has very nicely explained that the whole purpose of the Gita is to bring us to the point of bhakti, devotion to surrender to Krishna. So Prabhupada has explained everything within that context, and he's perfectly legitimate for him to do so. And not to do that is not Bhagavad Gita, because that was not Krishna's purpose. So in this way, the purpose of the Vedic literature is described to us through the acharyas. And all the acharyas, they execute their mission in terms of the time and the place and the circumstance. Just like we see in India in medieval times. Ramanuja Acharya and Madhva Acharya especially, and their followers in disciplinary succession, had big philosophical battles with Mayavadis, followers of Shankaracharya. Prabhupada also. Nirvishesha Shunyavadi, first opposition. Yes. Now, how they did that exactly? You see that they had to counter Shankaracharya and the followers of Shankaracharya in disciplic succession on a philosophical basis based on the Upanishads and Vedanta Sutra, because Shankaracharya established his philosophy on the basis of Vedanta Sutra, and Vedanta Sutra is established on the basis of the Upanishads. All these sutras of the Vedanta Sutra are based on Upanishad. So any commentator on the Vedanta Sutra, what is the meaning of this? Janmadyasya yataha. So what is exactly the meaning of that? Any commentator has to extract from the Upanishads what are the Upanishadic references which establish this point, and then he'll interpret it in his own way. That's the method of interpretation. So Shankaracharya did that. Then Ramanujacharya came and showed that actually this is done it in a wrong way. See, Shankaracharya made from the Vedic literature, he established that kevaladvaitavad, everything is non-different. Everything is simply one. See, within the Vedic knowledge, there are so many different things said. So to try to arrive at consistency and to find the purpose of the Vedas, different philosophers have postulated different theories. Shankaracharya postulated the theory kevaladvaitavad. Everything is all. Well, the purpose of the Vedas is to teach us that everything is simply one in all respects. There's no difference. Any semblance of difference is simply an illusion. This is Shankaracharya's philosophy. So then Ramanujacharya came, and he gave a different understanding. Vishishtadvaita. That in one sense, everything is all one, but there are the absolute truth, there are also qualities within that. There are, he gave the idea that the super, just like the body, within the body there's the soul, so in the same way there is the cause of manifestation, which is like the body of the Supreme Lord, who is the soul of them. So he gave his idea. Then Madhvacharya gave his philosophy of Dvaitava, Shuddha Dvait, that every two-ness, everywhere, why oneness? Shankaracharya says oneness, but Madhvacharya says two-ness. There's always difference. You can't say there's no difference. There's difference between the Supreme Lord and the Jiva. There's difference between the Supreme Lord and matter. There's difference between Jiva and matter. There's difference between one item of matter and another item of matter. There's difference between the Jivas. There's also different kinds of differences. You see? One cow is different to another cow. They're both the same in as much as they're cows. But one cow is different to another. And the cow's leg is different to the cow's tail. In this way, he pointed out there are so many different differences. So all these philosophies were there, and especially Ramanujacharya and Madhvacharya, their tradition is highly scholastic. Indeed, Madhvacharya's writings were so scholastic and terse that it's very difficult for anyone to understand them. It's only later when other scholars in his sampradaya, especially Jayatirtha, explained that otherwise no one could. At that time he was going around and preaching, but his writings, they had to be explained by others because they're so difficult to understand. Such a high level of scholarship. Once Madhvacharya, he went into one meeting of scholars. So he was glorifying the names of Lord Vishnu, and he said that all of the names of Vishnu can be, they have unlimited meanings. You could find at least 1,000 meanings for every name of Vishnu. So they asked, come on, that's a big, how can you say that? So then he started explaining. And once he got past one or two names, explaining 1,000 meanings of each name, he'd find one name, Labru, for instance. And he will explain with all references to different Upanishads, Ba'a, all the. So they asked him, please stop, we can't understand what you're saying anyway. It's too difficult for us. Unlimited meanings. So the acharyas, they established their mission on their philosophical understandings of the Vedas with very deep philosophical methodology, which nowadays no one can understand. Even in those days, it's very difficult to understand. Even Shankaracharya's philosophy, it's very difficult to understand. It doesn't make any sense. How can you understand it? But when they try and say everything is, they try to establish philosophically that everything is all one, you can try and intellectually understand it. It really doesn't make any sense. If you say, as the great poet John Lennon said, that I am me and you are we and I am me and you are we and we are all together. I am me and you are we and you are me and we are all together. It doesn't make any sense. I am you. You are me. You are feeling hungry. I will eat the food. It's all the same. You are me. So if I'm eating, it's just the same as you eat. You are working hard. I will take the money. It doesn't make any sense. Anyway, these acharyas, they established their philosophies on very, very, very deep and subtle understandings. Of course, it's not only philosophy. That's the thing within Shankaracharya's teachings. He established this panchopasana, but for those who are the topmost self-realized, so-called, for them there was nothing. Just they realized, that's all. You know, we're all what I am. Tattvamasi. You are that. Bhagavacharya interpreted that actually it's really atattvamasi. You are not that. And others said, what are you doing? How can you say that? It's not what's in the Upanishad. So then later on, his followers in disciplic succession came and they said, yes, he's right. And they proved with so many scholarly references. It's a highly scholastic tradition, which nowadays no one can understand. Srila Prabhupada has given the same truth. It's actually the same. What Ramanuja, Madhav, Vallabhacharya, Nimbakacharya, and all the acharyas, they're all saying the same thing. Like you have in Bhagavatam, Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna says, Sarvadhamman Parityaja, Mamekam Sharanam Vraja. Vallabhacharya says, Sri Krishna Sharanam Mama. Another saying, Vallabhacharya, what is it? No. What is it? Vastu hi Krishna Veva. The actual fact, the actual substance is Krishna. So all the Vaishnava Acharyas, they're all saying the same thing. But little different angle of vision, just like watching the running from two different sides. It may appear to be a little different, but actually they're simply seeing from different angles of vision. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's approach in explaining the Vedic knowledge was different. He didn't make a philosophy and try to explain the Vedic knowledge within them. But his approach was simply to accept the Vedic knowledge as it is. Between the Advaitavadis and Dvaitavadis, there was always this tension because some of them wanted to, the Advaitavadis, they want to accept the statements in Shastra which establish non-difference and reject those which establish difference. And the Vaishnavas, vice versa. There's somewhere in the Shastra we find statements, just like this, Tattvamasi, you are that. Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahma, I am the spiritual substance. Then we find within the Upanishads also opposite, apparently, the Veda Shruti, Veda Vakya. There's Abheda Vakya and Abheda Vakya. So we find also in the Upanishads, Tamishvaranam Paramam Maheshvaram. He is the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Control. So how to reconcile these? The Mayavadi or Abheda Vakya say, no, we don't. We only accept the Veda Vakya. And the Dvaita Vakya say, no, we don't accept this Abheda Vakya. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, it's all Vedic knowledge, we have to accept it all. How is that? That the Supreme Lord is... If the Veda says that we are non-different from the Supreme Lord, it must be true. If the Veda says that we are different from Him, it must be also true. How is that possible? It's possible. You take the example, the drop of water is not different from the ocean. In quality, it's exactly the same. Whether you take one drop of water, or the whole ocean, quality is the same, the quantity is different, so it's different and non-different at the same time. Achintya bhedavid. Achintya, sometimes scholars, they translated that as unthinkable. No, it's not that, then it would mean it's not understandable. It is understandable. But the limits of understanding, because there are no limits. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained like this. There's the perfect understanding. Actually, there should not be any, should not be that there is any philosophical system imposed on the Vedic knowledge by which we try to explain it. Rather, the Vedic knowledge is self-effulgent. It simply requires someone to turn the light on, to reveal that to us. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained like this. And within this understanding, we have perfect synthesis of all Vedic knowledge. Not really synthesis, but from the point of view of philosophical development, it appears to be a synthesis of all these different philosophies, but actually it is the complete understanding as it is. Plus, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained even more than is directly given in the Vedas. What is the secret essence of the Vedas? That Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has revealed. There's one nice song by the great Vaishnav poet, Vasu Ghosh, an associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He says, Jodi gaur na hoito, tabe ki hoito, kemane dharitambe, radhar mahima prema rasa shima, jagate janatoke. He said that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had not come. What would have happened? How could we have known? How could the, who could have understood the glories of Srimati Radharani, which are the ultimate limit of loving exchanges? Who could have explained this to the world? So this is the contribution of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that is coming down in disciplic succession. Now we find that Prabhupada, he has presented the same knowledge in disciplic succession, unchanged. But he's also presented it in a way which is suitable for fulfilling Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's prediction that Pritivite Ache Jatanagaradi Gram Sabhana Kracha Hoibe Moana. This knowledge will be spread all over the world. Who is going to take this knowledge? You see, formerly great learned brahmanas, they were discussing in great depth. Who is going to understand all these subtle points of Sanskrit grammar? Many of the interpretations given by Shankaracharya, they rest upon abstruse understandings of Sanskrit grammar. Who is going to understand all these things? If it's going to be spread all over the world, among the barbarians, who don't even understand, they don't even understand the most basic points. We're not this body. First lesson, Bhagavad Gita. Who's going to learn, or how are they going to learn all these things? So Prabhupada has presented that same knowledge in very simple language. Not that there's anything missing from them, but many of the, you see all these abstruse, you know that word abstruse means? It means very fine and subtle. Many of these very fine and subtle explanations, actually they're not required. They're required for those who are very much on the scholarly and intellectual platform. But otherwise not, otherwise not required. You see, just like the farmer feeds his cow with grass. The scientist can come and say, well, how the grass is growing with the chlorophyll interacts with the sunlight and so on. The farmer doesn't need to know that to feed his cow the grass. Simply feeds the cow grass and the cow gives milk and the farmer drinks it and so on. So someone may study so many things, but what's the actual point? To feed the grass to the cow and the cow gives milk. So in the same way, without going through so many explanations, which have only become necessary because someone has given a wrong idea, because Shankaracharya has given the wrong idea and presented it in complex word jugglery, taking obscure Sanskrit grammatical rules and interpreting them to change the meaning of what is actually the Shastra. Therefore, the Vaishnava Acharyas in the past had to come out and say, no, there's this Sanskrit grammatical rule and therefore it doesn't mean that, it means this. But who's going to understand all these things in the modern world anyway? Therefore, Prabhupada simply writes, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of the Godhead. And that's the same conclusion you can get by going through millions of Shastras. Prabhupada simply writes it down. Actually, there's one scholar in South India, very deeply learned. He was reading Prabhupada's, he was amazed. I've had this experience myself of meeting big scholars in India, and they're discussing with me, and they're amazed. They say, well, how do you know? I'm saying Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All the demigods are dependent upon him, they're not equal with him, they're subordinate to him. And they're amazed. How do you get this knowledge? We know there's so many scholars in India, they can quote so many Upanishads and this and that, but they can't understand this. How do you understand? You read Prabhupada's book? Big, big scholars, they're confused. Luhyanti yat suryaha. They're confused. They're reading so many things and they can't understand. Prabhupada has given the knowledge so clearly, so directly, that even actually it's